The Sierra Nevada Corporation is working with the Kennedy Space Center to develop the Dream Chaser, or HL-20. The vehicle is being developed to take the place of the space shuttle in bringing astronauts to the International Space Station. Jim Ball is NASA's deputy manager at the Center for Planning and Development. He joins us now live with some details and some background. Mr. Ball, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Well, it's my pleasure.
So what is the nature of this agreement? Is this a done deal, a contract where we'll see the Dream Chaser, great name, by the way, filling in the gaps where the space shuttle's leaving off?
Well, actually, the agreement that Kennedy Space Center has entered into with Sierra Nevada is a what we call a Space Act agreement to work with that company on helping them understand how they would process their shuttle-like vehicle at the Kennedy Space Center, which is where they plan to launch if they are the successful offerer to NASA of commercial crew services. Now, Sierra Nevada is only one of four companies, and we're working with all of them here at KSC as well as across the NASA organization, that have been selected at this point to be developing the next stage of their preparation for competing with one another and possibly other companies for a contract that's yet to be awarded by NASA. And that would be a services contract for actually delivering the astronaut crews to the International Space Station. So that part is certainly not done yet. Sierra Nevada has a very interesting design, and they are, as I said, one of four companies that right now are receiving some NASA seed funds to assist them with their development. But the actual competition for the selection of one or more of those companies to provide services to NASA is some time off yet.
So would it be accurate to say this is a plan to use the skills and also get some income into the 19,000, I believe it is, NASA and contractor workers at Kennedy because in the aftermath of the closure of the shuttle?
Well, it is accurate to, you know, from the standpoint that Kennedy Space Center, of course, is looking at a very significant transformation of its workforce and its facilities, now that we've had the final space shuttle Atlantis launch, and of course that's still in space. But as that comes to a wheel stop here in a couple of weeks, that workforce is in transition. We will be having to lay off a number of workers, quite a number of workers, for which there just isn't you know, a current need because the shuttle program is retiring. However, much of the experience we have at KSC is directly applicable to new vehicles like the Sierra Nevada Dream Chaser and the other companies that are developing different types of spacecraft. And with all that experience at KSC, of course, we've wanted to make that available both to assist the commercial space industry and to provide, you know, a new opportunity for us to retain that workforce or some of those skills and the facilities that have been built up over the years to support space launch.
And does NASA anticipate that eventually when one of those companies is chosen to provide the launch vehicle, and we know that it works at that point, it, as you say, it needs processing to be prepared for flight and then fixed after it comes back. Do you anticipate the winning company perhaps hiring some of those same people to do the same work only for them instead of for NASA?
Absolutely. We really see a transition of the Kennedy Space Center to a multi-user space launch complex, which basically means it becomes more like one might think of an airport or a seaport, that there's more than one airplane or more than one boat using the facility. We have traditionally been a government-only facility serving primarily the single major launch program that NASA would have had engaged at the time for the Apollo Saturn. Of course, that was landing Americans on the moon. And then we're just about to conclude the 30-year history of the space shuttle. But as we move off into the future, NASA is, of course, developing what's called the Space Launch System, which is going to enable our astronauts to go beyond Earth orbit, perhaps back to the moon, an asteroid, and one day to Mars. But the commercial sector, like Sierra Nevada, are developing a fleet of vehicles and spacecraft that will be able to service the needs of many users in low Earth orbit. And among those users will be NASA. So Kennedy Space Center is adapting its workforce and its facilities to support both these commercial providers as well as NASA's own programs that are coming in the future.
Would that the benefits are fairly obvious, but I wonder if that also presents challenges that you're trying to avoid before they become landmines that you trip over. And we are talking with Jim Ball, NASA's deputy manager at the Center for Planning and Development, talking about the new replacements for the space shuttle. So what would some of those challenges be?
Well, we're having to learn how to do business in a different way. And, of course, it's forging a whole new relationship between industry and the government, and specifically in NASA, whereas over the past decades, the aerospace industry in the United States has largely been just contractors to NASA. And it was all NASA-run, NASA programs, NASA-owned vehicles. But now we're looking at an industry that is emerging its own capabilities to both privately finance and operate space launch vehicles and meet both NASA and other users' needs. So the big challenge is really the transition of not only the physical infrastructure at KSC, but our NASA culture and our NASA organization to establish a new way of doing business and interacting with our industry partners.
For the time being, it's the Soyuz. Can you give us an idea of how close to reality any of these competing space vehicles actually are?
Well, we think that they're moving along with quite quick progress, and that from what we have seen in schedules and from what NASA's own commercial crew program is pushing, it is indeed possible that some of these capabilities could begin to show test flights as early as 2014 and maybe be able to put crew into space as early as 2015. And so that is only a few years. Remember when the Apollo-Saturn program came to a close with the Apollo-Soyuz mission in 1975, it was 6 years before the first space shuttle flew with crew on it, astronauts Young and Crippen, in 1981. So it's not unprecedented that we have a gap, but what's unusual, of course, is that we do continue to have American astronauts flying onto the International Space Station, and there is no way for them to get there on an American vehicle. We, as you pointed out, will be reliant upon the Russian Soyuz capsule and our partners in Russia to provide space flight to our astronauts. And they, of course, are going to charge NASA for that service. So we're very anxious to see the commercial providers be successful to develop one or more. You know, we'd really ideally like to see a couple of these companies at least providing capabilities that may be very different but serve the purpose of being able to deliver NASA astronauts to the station. You know, this could be in Sierra Nevada's Dream Chaser. It could be in a capsule like some of the other providers are developing. But the point is not so much what does it look like or how does it operate, but does it meet the U.S. needs for providing support not only to NASA, but to our commercial interests so that space and aerospace industry remains strong in this nation?
Jim Ball is Deputy Manager for the Center of Planning and Development Office at NASA. Thanks very much for that update.
My pleasure to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
And we have links to more information. You can hear this interview again at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.